Welcome to this episode of Horrific History and Hauntings. I'm Beth.
And I'm Rami. We're your hosts, here to talk about the stories that the history books ignore.
From horrific epidemics and ghostly hauntings to the catastrophes and tragic events that have sickened humanity.
Yeah. Beth, what do we talk about today? And is there a thing in history that happened?
Well, our main episode is going to be about the Zachary Bowen and Addie Hall case.
Never heard of it.
It's a tragic New Orleans Hurricane Katrina romance that became toxic.
The water did that too.
Yes, the water did that, but we'll go into that story later. This day in history, the day we're recording is March 1st. And in 1966, on March 1st, the Soviet probe crashed into Venus.
And they just called it the probe.
No, they probably didn't, but I didn't actually go into that one. It was only like a paragraph long,
Pretty big deal for back then.
Read into it that much. But what caught my eye more, in 1692, March 1st, the Salem witch trials began, which, as always, it's just going to be a small, like, brief thing about it, because this is one of those that I'm going to have to do an episode on sometime.
Yeah.
In Salem, Massachusetts, Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and Tituba, I'm assuming is how you...
That's what I've always heard. I don't know if it's...
Okay, well, that sounds better than Tituba.
Tituba.
She was an enslaved woman, and all of these women were accused of witchcraft.
Was she not Native American?
She, Barbados,
yep,
I believe,
word.
Is where she was from.
I don't know. I thought she was Native American. I thought there was a Native American involved somewhere, but I'm not sure. You got the notes. I don't. I'm not sure.
We'll go by yours. I think I read that she was from Barbados.
Yeah.
Could be wrong. Sorry if I am.
Tituba.
She was possibly coerced into confessing. Most likely was coerced into confessing, actually, which sparked the Salem witch hunt hysteria. Trouble began in the small Puritan community when Reverend Samuel Parris's daughter, Elizabeth Parris, and his niece, Abigail Williams, started experiencing mysterious fits and ailments. I personally believe they were just some bored little brats that wanted to cause some trouble.
For the people who want to think they were more innocent, assume it was like a grain gone bad.
That may be a possibility. I don't know.
You know what? You've heard that story, right? Mold in the grain causes them to...
Yeah, I've heard that theory.
Nobody's sure, and there's no way to be sure.
A doctor attributed these ailments and fits to witchcraft. Encouraged by adults, they accused more people, including men and even a four-year-old child. I wonder what happened to the child. I really need to remember to look that up. I'm going to bookmark this page on my Good Notes app so that I'll know to look that up and highlight it whenever I decide to do the actual full episode about this, because I want to know what happened to that kid. Over the following months, over 150 individuals were accused of satanic practices. In June 1692, the court, led by Chief Justice William Staunton, I don't know if that Staughton, convened in Salem to judge the accused. Bridget Bishop was the first to be tried and was found guilty, and this led to her hanging on June 10th. 13 women and 4 men representing various social statuses were also executed, along with Giles Corey, who was crushed to death. I want to say he was an older man, too, if I'm not mistaken.
He's the one that asked for more stones.
Yeah. He's like, screw y'all.
Yeah. He was not going to lie to get someone else in trouble. The thing is, if they confessed and pointed out other people, their sentence wasn't as bad. So people, of course, were going to,
lie and say that. Yeah. I saw them.
Yeah, they're shoving the proverbial bamboo into your fingernails. Yeah. Of course they're going to say something.
Yeah. The witness behavior during the trials, marked by fits and hallucinations, often determined the defendant's fates.
They were allowed...
These little bratty girls had eaten moldy grain or whatever their problem was. Their fits, their tantrums, is what chose if you lived or you died.
There's an episode, I can't remember, I think it was on Paramount Plus. Might have been something else. I think it's Paramount Plus. They have a lot of Smithsonian-sponsored documentaries up, and they had one about this scenario here. And I trust it, because whose name was when it popped up? Smithsonian, I believe, the museum.
Yeah, as far as they know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They even tracked down the hanging tree. That was the whole story in the modern times, and they would go back and forth, you know, what they're doing now and what they were learning about the past, and they were tracking down the hanging spot for all these people. But they allowed in the court, the trial, they allowed spiritual evidence. So the girls could see invisible things in the trial and say, she's strangling me, and it was taken as fact.
I hope they enjoyed their 15 minutes of fame. In October 1692, Governor William Phipps disbanded the court and prohibited sensational testimony. Executions stopped, and eventually all awaiting trial were released, and those sentenced to death were pardoned.
Great for them.
The Salem witch trials, which led to the wrongful execution of 19 individuals, finally came to an end. And as I said, I hope those little brats that may have eaten moldy grain or whatever their issue was enjoyed their few months of fame, or well, I guess it was years, wasn't it? Well, no, it was the same year.
It was pretty quick.
It was months. I am going to go ahead and mention the sources. I got the idea and learned about this whole thing from the History Channel's Haunted History. There's a part of one of their episodes that mentioned it, and I was like, that sounds great. And I just immediately pulled out my iPad, got on my Good Notes app, and started scribbling down what little information. And then there's also an episode of The Handsome Devils, which mentions it. Most of the information I got is from the book Shake the Devil Off. It's written by Ethan Brown, and it can be found on Audible. About Zachary Bowen. He was born May 15th, 1978, and he was described as a regular guy. Apparently, people liked him. He was calm, shy, and quiet, yet also described as being goofy and outgoing with friends and family. And he was pretty tall. He was 6'10". Peppa was only 6'7".
Yeah.
And not that this really has much to do with anything, but he had a size 17 shoe.
Huh.
And this also doesn't have much to do with this, but I figured you would enjoy the little fact he liked Anne Rice books.
He's from New Orleans. He had to. It's a requirement.
Well, he's not from New Orleans. He ended up in New Orleans.
Oh, well.
He actually recommended Anne Rice books when he was in the military to his friends.
Well, I love them. I found them when I was maybe 12.
He also enjoyed grunge and metal music.
That's part of the Anne Rice thing.
And a little bit about his family and childhood life. His parents, Jack and Lori, had a rough marriage, and they had an on and off relationship. They traveled around in a Volkswagen bus with their kids, which sounds like fun to me.
How very hippie mm-hmm. era. Yeah.
But in 1985, the family moved to Whidbey Island to settle down. I don't know where that is. Oh, it's Whidbey Island. It's Whidbey. Well, sorry. It wasn't, like I said, it was an Audible book, so I wasn't reading it. I had to listen. It's in Washington.
Like Edward Collins?
Mm-hmm. The state.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another vampire.
In 1990, Lori finally decided to divorce Jack, and she moved to Santa Maria, California, taking Zach and his brother with her.
What's up with people leaving like chillier states and moving to California?
Because I don't like the cold.
Mm.
If I could, I would. But not California. I would probably go to actually New Orleans myself. But, you know, Joey doesn't much care for that area.
It's going to be underwater if the climate keeps changing.
Yeah, everywhere I want to live is going to be underwater. I want to go to Chicoteague and live. I would much rather live at Chicoteague, even if it does get cold. But and it's going to be underwater eventually, too.
And in California, we've all watched San Andreas.
There's many movies about California going down.
That's because it's got the fault line and the quake.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
Zach did well in school until he was nominated for Homecoming King.
And then everything went downhill.
Yeah, he apparently made A's and good grades. During his speech, he acted goofy and made jokes, saying that there should have been a mandatory nap time. And this apparently meant a lot to him, and he believed that his goofiness was what caused him to lose Homecoming King. He considered himself a failure and was really hard on himself. And then his grades began to slip, and eventually he dropped out.
That is a wild, slippery slope he found there, if that's the case.
He, from the get-go, always seemed to feel like he was a failure, it seems like. After dropping out, he decided to move to Washington with his father.
Back and then to the good state. Cold state.
They decided to go on a cross-country trip together. When they arrived in New Orleans, Zach and Jack got an apartment and settled down. Zach re-enrolled in high school, but eventually he dropped out of that again. His mother said that he called and said he wasn't happy in that school either. And eventually, I believe his father moved away, but Zach liked New Orleans and he stayed. When Zach was 18 years old, he met Lana Shupak. Shupak? While selling to-go cups of alcohol outside of a bar window on Bourbon Street. He leaned out the window, selling. Kind of like a drive-through, but you just walk up and get your alcohol and just continue walking down the street. It's actually really fun.
Cool.
Well, cool. Yeah, exactly. But it's not just Bourbon Street. You can do that. A lot of people think it's just Bourbon Street. You can do that all throughout New Orleans, as long as it's in a plastic cup.
Yeah.
When we first got there, when we first rolled up and was heading towards the Airbnb, on the road in the median was stalls with liquor stands, like little stalls that you would see at a fair or a lemonade stand, but it was liquor.
Jeez.
On the median.
In the road. They don't encourage drinking and driving. They just kind of encourage it.
And it was like one after the other. And coming from where we come from, you can imagine how shocked I was,
Virginia,
when we seen that.
You can't even buy alcohol without going to a state-ran store.
Yeah.
The
VABC. Unless you're at a restaurant. That was fascinating to me. The whole place is fascinating to me. Now, Lana was a stripper who was traveling with her friends from Texas. She was trying to get out of the stripper lifestyle.
Adult entertainment.
Yes. Adult entertainment. What, is stripper a bad word?
No, I just assume an entertainer.
Oh, okay.
I just assume that's part of it. I don't think it's a bad word. Somebody let us know that too.
I don't know.
Oh, we mean no offense. Have all stripping you want to do.
I know you
care.
Use sex workers now, but she wasn't a sex worker. She was a stripper. Make that money. Apparently, she was doing quite well at it. From what I read, she was making quite a bit of money each night. I think it was in the thousands.
Yeah,
so
people get
go
drunk
you.
And throw their money away. And, or not throw it away, throw it at you, I guess. I wish I could get away with doing something like that.
One of her friends was first interested in Zach. She was the one that noticed him. But her friend ended up backing off when she realized that Zach and Lana were hitting it off. And she was 10 years older than him. But she didn't know his age until after she became pregnant with their son, Jackson.
What a name.
Mm-hmm. When she found out how young he was, she distanced herself from him for a while. And on July 13th, 1997, she went into labor and didn't bother calling him.
Okay.
Of course, he was nervous and afraid. He was 17 or 18. I want to say he was 18 years old now. And he was going to be a father. So he was worried. He was nervous. But she was the one that backed off because of his age. A few weeks later, she had one of her friends inform him of the birth of their child. Lana said that Zach was terrified of being a young father, as I mentioned before. But after the birth of Jackson, he became a great father and a better partner to her as well. She said that one day he asked her if she would like health insurance and that she could get health insurance if they got married. So a few days before the wedding, Zach called his mother and informed her that Lana was pregnant with their second child, Lily.
Oh, at least it's a boy and a girl.
Isn't that a great proposal?
Mm-hmm.
You want health insurance? Marry me.
That's American. That's just the American way now.
Oh. With a wife and two kids, Zach wanted to make a better life for his family. So in the year 2000, he got his GED. On May 12th, he took his brother's advice and enlisted in the Army for an 8-year term. At the time he enlisted, there was no war going on and no real threat. But after 9/11 happened, he ended up having to go to Baghdad, I believe.
Not a very friendly place at the time.
Mm.
I don't know. I wasn't there, but...
Well, from what I understand, no, not really.
I was 11. I wouldn't have been there unless something went terribly wrong.
The book has a lot more information about his time in Baghdad, and not even just his time, just in general, the whole thing of what was going on there. And also, it has a lot of things about what happened after Hurricane Katrina that's not necessarily pertaining to Zach's personal life in general.
But
obviously, I didn't add that. But just so you know, the book has a lot more about that.
The city was a mess. The certain areas completely got ignored with the rebuilding help and everything.
Mm-hmm. The places that need it the most.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to talk about Zach's life in the military. One thing he saw that was mentioned in the book Shake the Devil Off was a burned truck with scorched Iraqi soldiers, and to which Zach said, crispy.
Well,
according to the military buddy that the author interviewed, because the author actually did go through, he moved to New Orleans and wrote this book, and he interviewed, I want to say, Lana and a bunch of his military friends, plus mutual friends of him and Addie.
Yeah.
So
it very goes thorough.
In, yeah, he did a very good job.
Honestly, though, that doesn't sound like the worst thing you could say at the moment. At the time, well, tensions were very high.
One of the army buddies said that it was just the way to handle what they seen.
Yeah.
There's not much they could have done about it. They had to handle it somehow. It's kind of like us with our dark humor about our relatives' deaths.
Yeah, we do that. And as long as it don't hurt nobody, I don't see no harm in it.
Yeah. Zach witnessed the loss of many of his friends, which caused him to have severe depression and PTSD when he came back home.
They could have been driving by you in a burnt out husk. So, gallows humor. You need it.
It didn't really help that while in Baghdad, his wife Lana became very ill. And even though doctors thought she wouldn't make it at times, and doctors wrote the people in charge and asked if he could come back so he could help his wife, they refused to allow Zach to come home to care for her. Rachel was one of Zach's close friends in the military. She was 19 years old when she was killed while in a Humvee that was hit by an explosive. And he got really close with her. I believe they played music together as well to pass the time.
Huh.
And there's quite a few entries from her journal that the book I mentioned before goes into.
Well, that's very thorough. You get the dead girl's journal.
Yeah. Explains more about their friendship. And there was even a dream before she died that she mentioned in her journal where she dreamed all of her loved ones, including her deceased loved ones, were all in black and they acted or they pretty much couldn't hear her or acknowledge her, it seemed.
Oh.
Which I thought was pretty strange.
Yep.
And then afterwards, she ended up getting killed after that dream. Zach gave a little Iraqi girl in the street some candy one time, and he later found out she was killed the next day for talking to an American.
Oh, dear.
So that one hit him hard as well. He blamed himself, of course. It wasn't his fault,
No. But
he blamed himself. He thought it was. He also befriended a young Iraqi boy whose family owned a store, just like a little general store. And the boy would bring Zach and his military buddies treats and snacks and drinks from the store. And Zach, in return, was teaching him English.
That's probably dangerous.
It's unknown if it was because of these particular interactions with Zach. But one day, the boy's family store was blown up, and it killed the whole family inside, including the boy.
Well, if he was in there, I would say more than one American was in there. So not necessarily just him, but it probably had something to do with it.
Yeah, but that's so wrong. Come on now. There's no reason to be blowing up full families and little boys and killing little girls because you have anger issues.
That's why they call it terrorism.
This mixture of depression due to the loss and what he was witnessing and also his worry for Lana at home caused Zach to be completely done with the military. He was done. He was ready to go.
When his time was up, he's like, toodles.
Well, he didn't wait till his time was up. He began failing his physicals multiple times on purpose.
Looks like they would catch on.
I think they did, and I'll go into that here in a minute. November 23rd, 2004, he was given a general discharge. This pissed some people off because he lost some of the benefits he would have gotten if he would have been given an honorable discharge. But I think they gave him this general one because I think they knew he was purposely failing his physicals. I don't know for sure. That's not exact. It wasn't specified. I'm just assuming that's why they gave him that. And as I said, he had to sign a paper saying that he would lose health insurance and it was going to be harder to find civilian work. And there was a few other things that was mentioned in the book that he lost an advantage.
Yeah.
Lana wasn't happy about it. This was the reason that Zach joined the military, was to keep her from having to strip and keep him from working in bars.
Why is so bad about working in a bar?
I don't know. I've never worked in a bar. So
I've known people
know.
Who wanted to work in bars and who have worked in bars and seemed perfectly happy.
Eventually, Lana decided to leave him. They separated, but I don't think they ever officially divorced. In the documentary, The Handsome Devils, she stated that their separation was because he came back from the military a different man than the one that she had married, and that he lacked emotion. It was also mentioned that when Zach tried to talk about what he went through while in the military, some of the people he tried to talk to didn't really want to talk about it, didn't want to listen, which is kind of messed up. Because that may have been something he really needed, is just someone to listen to him.
And about insurance, this. It's a lot harder to do it with a professional.
Yeah.
At least here. If you're from another country, you're usually
lucky
about that.
I'm not blaming these people. I'm sure it probably was difficult to hear what he had been through.
They're out here drinking and like, don't be a downer as they stop at the drive-up stand.
Yeah, exactly. I think that may have been one of the things that was said in the book, actually.
Wow.
I could be wrong, but I feel like in one of the sources, that's something that was said, which is kind of messed up. I'm not trying to blame anybody, but you really should listen to your friends if they say that they're having a hard time. And then he just started like smiling and pretending to be fine, apparently.
I mean, if it's only really interactive with other people, I guess that's what you got to do, or don't do it at all.
Zach ended up finding a job and was given the 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. shift at a bar called Hog's Bar.
Oh, sounds like a great place.
Mm. It was located in the French Quarter, so
probably
fine. He did bar tricks and magic tricks, and he was known as a ladies' man. There was a picture of him before. I don't know. It was probably obviously before he was in the military, but he had some pretty long hair, too.
I'm sure that's why the tips rolled right on in.
I don't think he had long hair at this point because he had been in the military and you got to shave it, sadly.
But he was a handsome man.
I only looked at a couple of pictures, but in the couple of pictures, he looked like a handsome man.
Okay.
But it's also times when graphics wasn't as good as they were.
All I'm taking on old Nokia
flip
phones.
Newspaper pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, and also there had been a hurricane in one of them and he was on the sidewalk.
They prioritized other photos.
Aside from the one lady he had his eyes on, all these other women wanted him. This one didn't. And this is the one he wanted.
Oh, you always want what you can't have.
Yep. Adrian Addy Hall.
Interesting name again.
I thought Adrian would have been the Addy for short, but apparently not. Wouldn't you have thought that?
Yeah.
It's not. Now I'm going to talk about Addy Hall. She was 29 years old and was described as being thin and short.
Okay. That's very descriptive.
She worked at the bar that Zach worked at, but she worked the shift after his, and she didn't find him as charming as the other girls, as I mentioned.
Okay.
He started staying after his shift at the bar to hang out and try to get to know her during her shift. Sounds pushy. I'm not interested in you. Okay, well, you can't leave because you're at work, so I'm just going to stay here anyway. But it wasn't. It was actually kind of sweet. She was originally from North Carolina, and she was described as being a free spirit hippie type girl. She first traveled to New Orleans. She lived in her car until she was able to afford an apartment. Some of her skills was she was a dancer, an artist, a seamstress, and apparently a very good poet.
Yeah.
I'm not much into poetry, but the people in the interviews seem to really enjoy her poetry. She had trouble keeping roommates and went through many due to her abusive mood swings, though. Though she was described as being fun-loving when sober, when she drank too much, and she could be outright cruel, some of her friends said, to those around her. It was also mentioned that she went through many abusive relationships, and at one point she used one of her previous roommate's pay stubs that he had left after moving out so that she could get the utilities turned back on in his name after he had turned them off.
Okay.
Yeah. Eventually, after a few drinks and chats, and Zach not giving up on hanging out at the bar after his shift to get her more on his side, Addy gave him a chance and they began to date, and things seemed to be going well. Friends said that Addy seemed really happy.
That's always nice. It's pretty much the first version of a honeymoon, though. So
yeah, the honeymoon stage. Addy's friends did mention that she had a bad temper when she drank too much, and that was mentioned before. Also, one of the sources mentioned that she had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. On August 29th, 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. Lana called Zach and asked him to go with her and the kids during the hurricane and even told him to bring Addy along. Like she said, it's fine. Bring her along. I just want you to be safe with your kids. But Zach refused and decided that he and Addy would wait out the storm in Addy's apartment, which I don't know if this was fully his decision. Nobody really knows. I'm starting to wonder if she didn't push him into staying with her.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to go and be awkward. Which I get, but after the storm, when there was no electricity or supplies, they stuck around and enjoyed the freedom from a normal society. They didn't have to work and didn't have to worry about responsibilities. And honestly, that sounds great to me as well, as awful as that sounds. They would take alcohol from the bars that were abandoned and shut down.
That's called looting.
Yes, they would loot. They would loot. And they would get food from the closed up grocery stores.
That's called looting.
Yes.
I mean, if you need food,
but
though,
you need it. Yeah. So.
You could do it without the alcohol.
I will forgive you. Yeah,
it's,
the alcohol,
it's easy to
you
forgive the food.
They would cook the canned foods and they would burn mattresses, and they served alcohol on the street outside of the apartment to the group of people who had stayed behind. They became like this whole community.
This is
people.
Like a story of Fallout the video game. After the bombs fell, people opened up more bars and looted everything.
What else you gonna do?
I don't know. I like actual fictional stories of things like this.
One's real.
Yeah, obviously. You just take out the hurricane and replace it with nuclear war, and here we go. We got Fallout.
But yeah, they had their cool little community, and they would spend their day trying to clean up the debris and trash that was caused by Katrina off of the streets. And then at night, they would serve drinks. Pretty much an outside restaurant on the street is what they had outside their apartment.
They made money.
A bar / restaurant. No, they didn't.
Okay, that's fair. Okay. As long as everybody... No. This is like a big commune going on out of the apocalypse.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Okay. As long as they're not charging other hungry survivors for their fun.
They were not charging. They were just helping feed and drink
the problems away.
But this little community...
It sounds like they worked really hard during the day, too.
Yeah, they would clean up the debris and the trash, as I mentioned, and try to get things clean again.
You take out trash and add brush and gardening, and you would have a cult. Let's go out and work the fields, Jebediah, or whatever. You chose as your new name.
Zach and Addie began gaining attention from this. Their little community did, because the news crews were like, why did these people stick around and they're just happy as can be and they're serving food and drinking out on the street?
Because you work as much as you need to and want to, and you get free food and drinks.
Yeah.
If you want the new big flat screen TV in the store window, as long as it ain't got a water line on it, it's yours.
Yeah, I actually love that.
I love looting.
Okay, maybe not looting, but I love the whole community. Don't have to worry about money. You work for me, and I'll make sure you're good with necessities.
This is sharecropping.
I don't know. I like it. I like this idea.
Okay. Indentured servitude.
So their pictures began showing up in the newspapers.
Awesome.
They enjoyed their fame and their freedom to the point they were seen holding hands while riding bikes down the street.
Oh.
And getting even more romantically close by having sex in the streets.
Hope the news station didn't get that one.
Hmm.
It's just mayhem in New Orleans. That's why that's why they stopped sending money.
Some of the people that they were friends with is the ones that was mentioning this part in the interviews.
I mean, if your house is flooded, what are you going to do?
One New York Times article they had written about Addie and Zach, it's going to be a quote. Some holdouts seem intent on keeping alive in the distinct and wild spirit of this city. In the French Quarter, Addie Hall and Zachary Bowen found an unusual way to make sure the police officers regularly patrolled their house. Mrs. Hall, 28, a bartender, flashed her breasts at the police vehicles that passed by, ensuring a regular flow of traffic.
When you're running a free looted alcohol restaurant bar thing in the yard, you need to make sure that somebody doesn't come to rob you of your ill-gotten goods.
Because there's other looters and more dangerous people, as I am getting ready to mention. Though they enjoyed this lifestyle, Addie did find herself in a dangerous spot at one point. She was in Robert's Supermarket, which was an abandoned grocery store, and she was there to stock up on some supplies when a man who was hidden in one of the aisles tried to rape her.
Of course.
I'm not sure how she got out of this, but I know that Zach, from what I understand, was outside of the supermarket, so maybe he heard something and went in.
Cracked him in the head with a can of peas.
I don't know, but there's that. There comes the danger part.
Yeah, it's part of the apocalyptic scenario.
Yeah, but I feel like... there's no reason to be raping people.
No.
Go get your groceries. I understand the looting thing at the time is of necessity because you wasn't getting proper supplies.
Aid.
Yes. They were not doing a very good job at that, sadly. So
I
understand.
That was a Bush issue, wasn't it?
Huh?
I believe that was a Bush issue.
I don't know if it was a Bush issue or I'm not sure what it was, but Memo mentioned that we had relatives there during that time and they wouldn't even give them water.
Yeah.
So... I don't know what the deal was exactly.
There's a whole lot of documentaries more about the hurricane than these two.
And one day I will go into an actual just Hurricane Katrina. On September 3rd, Zach's PTSD was triggered when the Army arrived in New Orleans with their helicopters and such and to assist with the aftermath of the hurricane.
See, that's how long it took for them to send federal aid, I do believe. So I do believe it was a Bush issue.
Yeah. He began drinking more and I'm not sure where he found them. I want to say they met a friend along the way that in this little community of people that stayed behind, but he also began using a lot more drugs in an attempt to help with his flashbacks. At this same time, Addie was unable to fill her prescriptions for her bipolar disorder.
It's
well.
A recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
It's a little bit slower than the poor people who didn't have their life, you know, saving medications that passed away just within a day or so of the...
Yeah.
Because they didn't have their medicines, like insulin and stuff, I'm sure. But this is the same thing, but it's a longer period of time for it to take effect.
Yeah. So she also was excessively drinking as a way to cope. In September 6th, the mayor mandated the evacuation of all individuals from New Orleans, regardless of whether they were on private property or not. This pissed Addie and Zach off.
A lot of people probably got mad.
And they still refused to leave. They never left.
It's like those folks that wanted to stick around after the Chernobyl incident.
I feel like one's a lot worse.
Yeah. Hurricane's bad, but one you can... The people in trouble, it just appeared like everything was fine to them.
Yeah. At the moment.
Yeah. It's a slow, painful death they were in store for.
Yeah. Addie and Zach's relationship started deteriorating when they began having arguments and fights. After the residents began returning to New Orleans, their ideal romance of not having to work or have responsibilities and having the city all to themselves was being ruined with the return of New Orleans society. They began realizing they had to enter back into normal society and go back to work. So Zach got a job delivering groceries.
Really? That's a thing that happened back then?
I think it wasn't like DoorDash or anything. I think it was just the particular grocery store offered that.
A lot of people didn't have cars too, so.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people who relied on public transit no longer had that option either. The buses have been floated away. I don't know. They might have been in place, but they're probably waterlogged.
But apparently we have to stop here.
Yeah, we're going
And
on
it's
to
a terrible place to stop. I apologize. I was trying to do this all in one.
We're an hour already, and it's past time to get parts for those vehicles.
And it's not even at the good parts, so please, I know I've noticed that a lot of people will listen to the first part of the ones that I have to do in two parts, and they won't listen to the second one. I highly encourage you. Yes, I know this sounds completely ridiculous and boring at the point where we're having to stop. It is horrible, but the good stuff is coming in part two. I promise.
We try to keep these longer ones under an hour anyway, and today we actually have stuff to do. Otherwise, we won't have a car.
I have a car.
But I won't.
This is his fault.
Apologies on my half. Yeah, come back for part two. It is where the things turn bad in the relationship. And you didn't think Hurricane Katrina and PTSD was bad enough, but it does turn bad, I hear. I don't know anything about this.
Oh, it turns real bad.
Yeah, so come back for that. We have other episodes. If you'd rather, you know, if you listen to this far, it's kind of pointless for me to say if you'd rather listen to another one until the next one comes out, go and find our other episodes. There'll be a link in the description, even if you're on YouTube, wherever you're at. There'll be a link in the description on your podcast app, wherever. And it will have our link tree. It will have the first link in the link tree will be our website with all of our podcasts, everything in the Gruesome Gaming Group Network. Brother Knows Quest's podcast where I talk about tabletop role-playing games to my sister Beth here. And then we have Leveling Duo where me and someone else, usually my friend Dakota or Beth or someone, will talk about video games we used to play or play now that we really got into again. And then we have all our socials in the link tree and all that. There'll be an email right below the link tree link that will let you chat with me or give us ideas, or reach out to us. And there will be a link below that one for just this podcast. It will go straight to Beth, that one. If you want to just talk to her. Yeah, let us know what you think. Give us ideas if you have any. Reach out on the socials. Review the podcasts if you like. Subscribe to any of them. You don't even have to go to the link tree to find them. Just look up Brother Nurse Quest if you're into tabletop games or Leveling Duo if you like video games. And they'll be wherever you get your podcasts or just on YouTube. As a matter of fact, you can just Google them and it will take you to our website probably. Thank you for listening. I've been Raimi.
And I apologize for stopping at such a terrible part. I've been Beth.
Again, it's my fault, but we have to get my car running. Bye-bye.